Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staber. In an era dominated by screens, board games are experiencing a renaissance, offering players a tangible, social experience that digital games just can't replicate. The global board game market is valued at $21 billion last year, and it's projected to be $41 billion by 2029. Enthusiasts of board games will tell you interest always ebbs and flows, but that people will always crave the tactile experience of coming together in real life. We're talking all about board games this hour with creators, executives, and enthusiasts. Our panel of experts today includes Jordan McLaughlin of New Albany, who's the founder of Rookie Mage Games and creator of the new card game Don't Get Stabbed. Welcome to All Sides, Jordan.
Thanks for having me.
We also have Cheryl Harrison, the organizer of the Beers and Board Game Club of Columbus, which will host its annual 24-hour game marathon November 2nd. Welcome, Cheryl.
Good morning, Anna.
And last but certainly not least is Alyssa Schroeder, the Chief Marketing and Sales Officer for Dolphin Hat Games, who is the creator of Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza, one of my daughter's favorite games. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So I first want to talk about the expanding market, because when you look at the value of the global game market, it is growing and growing and growing. It's really having a resurgence, Cheryl.
Yeah. We have seen thousands of board games coming out every year. People always ask me, you know, what board games I like. And I'm like, it depends on the week, because there is something new out. And a lot of that has really been powered by Kickstarter over the past several years, especially. Both established game manufacturers and indie creators have found that as a platform for kind of niche titles, interesting gameplay mechanics, and really cool artwork and themes to find an audience to, you know, fund a game so you can pre-produce it rather than buying hundreds of thousands of dollars of pieces and then finding out that nobody's interested in that game. So that's been a really big driver for the board game industry.
Yeah. Jordan, how do you think the pandemic affected the popularity of board games? Because I know for us as a family, we bought quite a few.
Yeah, I think that, you know, just the isolation that a lot of people experience really renewed that desire for that human connection. So, you know, the people are looking for ways to connect with other people. And of course, I think they thought back to the good old days of being a kid sitting around playing Monopoly with your parents. And now you suddenly need to fill a bunch of time. And so people were going back to the things that made them comfortable, that they had nostalgia for. And then, of course, now that that happened, everyone's realized, wow, there's a renaissance of new games, of new exciting things. It's not just, you know, your old Monopoly and Chutes and Ladders anymore. There's something almost for everyone now.
Yeah, Alyssa, that's where I want to bring you in, because Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza is one of my kids' favorite games. They also love Tacos versus Burritos, Exploding Kittens. There's so many interesting, funky new games that definitely didn't exist when I was a kid.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, for games like Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza, they're so simple and they get that type of consumer who maybe didn't grow up playing board games, or maybe was frustrated or had those, you know, those moments of, wow, I'm not good at this. But Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza type games, I think, and that's where the Exploding Kittens, Taco vs. Burrito, all that kind of genre, they make it easy. They make it easy to learn, quick to play. So even if, you know, you're not into games, heavy strategy, big games, you can still really have fun, even as like a 7-year-old. So
yeah. Yeah, my husband and I got a pretty elaborate Western-themed board game. I think it was a Kickstarter project during the pandemic, and it took us a solid couple of hours to figure out how to play it.
Yeah, and those are fantastic. But, you know, for the average consumer, starting with just getting into games that don't take a lot is, you know, something I always recommend.
Yeah. Jordan, so I've got to ask, tell us about Don't Get Stabbed. I'm immediately intrigued by the name.
Yeah, I like to say the best thing I ever did was come up with that name, and it was probably one of the first things that I did. So Don't Get Stabbed actually started in 2019. I was at my cousin's house, and we were just kind of having a game night, And my cousin just suggested, like, hey, you should make a game. And while, on the drive home, I'm talking about how, oh, I want it to be called Don't Get Stabbed. It's going to be about horror movies, but it's going to be more about the fun part of it. It's not going to be like bloody and gory or anything. And so, like, I joke that my husband laughed and thought this is just one of his crazy ideas that he's just gonna, forget about in a day or two. But it didn't. It became kind of my obsession for a while. And I eventually went to Kickstarter, and it's kind of taken on a life of its own now. I was just at a convention last weekend down in Lexington, and people were coming up that, like, oh, I love your game. Will you sign the box? Can you talk to me about the game? So it's been always like a very surreal experience. But it's something that, I'm internally proud of. It's one of those things like you just put all your soul and into, and then you see other people appreciate it, and it just means the world.
Yeah. As somebody who's had to name things, including tiny humans, it's so hard. I can't believe you got it so quickly.
It was kind of like a joke for a while, and then it just became, like there's no other name that will work for this. It has to be this.
We also want to invite you to join the conversation this hour. Do you have a favorite board game? Are you looking for a new one? You can give us a call at 614 292-8513, or you can email allsides@wosu.org. Cheryl, tell us a little bit about Beers and Board Games Club of Columbus.
Sure. I started Beers and Board Games Club in 2013. We celebrated our 10-year anniversary
Oh,
last
congrats.
year. Thank you. And I started it because I started getting into tabletop gaming. I had a friend who inherited a board game library from a colleague of his who passed away, and we just started playing our way through the games on the weekends. One of the very first ones we played, which at this point maybe too triggering, is Pandemic. So it seemed like a fun game at the time. It was less fun to live for a few years, but I was just really enjoyed, these interesting mechanics I'd never seen. And as someone who grew up playing a lot of Monopoly, playing games where there's a little more balance, a little more, you're not out of the game right away kind of equilibrium, I wanted to find more people to play games with. And so I hosted the first meetup. I think we had four people show up, one of whom was my boyfriend, who I forced to attend. And then we started to grow from there. We host weekly meetups at this point. We get around 40 or 50 people who show up every week, and we meet at different breweries around Central Ohio.
And if you haven't played games since you were a kid playing Monopoly, is there something for you if you come out?
Absolutely. We have an incredibly kind and welcoming group of people. And even people who are active in gaming, there's just so many new games coming out that almost no one shows up and knows how to play 60% of the games that are sitting on the table. So if you show up and you are willing to learn, we have folks who play lighter weight games that take 10, 20 minutes. We have folks who will play a 3 or 4 hour game that really involves a lot of strategy. So kind of a varied styles of games within our own group, but everyone is willing and happy to teach and welcome new folks to the table.
So, what is the 24-hour game marathon? Are you really playing for 24 hours?
Oh yeah. I've only personally made it 24 hours 2 of the 9 years so far, but we have a dedicated group who will be there the whole time. Everyone else is welcome to join us for a saner several hours, but you are welcome to stay the entire event. And we will be gaming at Olentangy River Brewing Company starting at 11 a.m. on Saturday, November 2nd. And the event is a fundraiser for Nationwide Children's Hospital. So it's $20 at the door. We'll have hundreds of board games. It's a mostly open gaming event, although we do have some scheduled games this year. We have a really cool silent auction, which has got tons of board games and other related experiences people can bid on. And then we always have a meta game where you earn points for staying at the event, for playing games, for achieving different things within those games, and then you win a free prize for participating in that.
That all sounds great. Is there a website where people can go to get more information?
Yep, beersandboardgames.com. You'll find all the information on that and our annual meetup schedule.
Alyssa, what makes a good board game? I know that's a big question, but as somebody who works at a gaming company, you're probably inundated with ideas and proposals. How do you sift the good from maybe the ones that need more work?
Yeah, and that's a very complex answer, Anna. You know, I think it depends on who you're catering to. So at least at Dolphin Hat Games, which is the company name for Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza, we focus on moms and kids and kind of this mass market. We often joke we make games for people who don't like games. And so for us, when we're sifting through ideas, we first think, is this something that mom can buy for her kid and it won't cause fights? The kids can learn it and play that on their own. The 7-year-old can play it, the 12-year-old can play it, and even mom and dad aren't going to sit there and think, oh my gosh, when will this game end? I don't want to be playing this anymore. Please do not pull that game out. So those are kind of some of the things we look through when we're trying to design games and come up with new games ideas. Is it going to be fast? Is it going to be fun? Is it going to be family friendly? No one's going to be running away, you know, having tears. It'll be a little bit of fun. You know, I mean, it'll be our CEO likes to joke, like a touch of danger. So if you've never played Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza, you know, it's kind of a slappy card game. So when you put down a taco and you say a taco, you race to slap it. So we like that little touch of danger, but you know, again, nothing that, you know, will monumentally make a kid run away crying. So for us, that's where we believe we've brought to the market something that's really going to increase that family time, make that family connection, and also be suitable for like grandparents who want to play it, parents who want to play it, young adults who are at college break. So kind of good for everything. So that's where what makes a good game in our eyes.
I want to take a call from Michael in Columbus. Welcome to All Sides.
Hi. I just want to talk about a game that I've always loved playing with my family called Hugger Mugger. I don't know if anyone would remember that, but it's a game hasn't been in print since I think the 90s. But it's a word game where you get to where you're trying to solve a mystery word by answering questions that are either a multiple choice or a word scramble or like a spelling bee. And then there's a one they call a horseshoe, which gives you sometimes it's a list 10 words that rhyme with or that end with the words END or.
Oh, that's neat. I've never heard of Hugger Mugger, and it looks like most of the panel has not heard of it either.
But yeah, it's one of my family's favorite games to play. They even made a junior version, so if you have kids, you could have that one out too, so that the questions are more of a second, third grade level versus
an adult. Yeah. Thanks so much, Michael. I think that's the fun part of games. No matter how much you're into them, Cheryl, you probably have never played them all.
Yeah, the way we structure our events is people just bring games from their library at home to share with the group. And I will say every week, I do not personally know at least half of the games that people have brought in because there's just such a breadth of new titles coming out all the time.
Jordan, Don't Get Stabbed sounds like a game for adults.
Yes.
But what do you look for in a good game?
So I always, whenever I'm working on a game, like I get it to a certain point and then I need to see people play it, even when it's not in a final form. I will do kind of like these playtesting parties where I'll have friends and family and I'll put this new kind of game in front of them and like, just play it. I'm just going to be here and watch. And all I'm doing is watching people's faces and their reactions and how they interact with each other. And if I'm seeing lots of giggling, if I'm seeing like laughing, those are the things I'm looking for. I want that emotional response and not the frustration of, you know, if you're reading through the instructions and they don't like you, they can't seem to figure it out, like, okay, something's wrong, I need to go back. But like, I want to make games that give people happy memories with each other. Like that's the reason they're playing these games. It's the game is like a facilitator for the relationship that you're having with the other people. So they're trying to create memories with people. You're just there to help them. So like, if your game isn't doing that, then the game isn't great. There's been a couple ones where I've thrown them away of, I can't get this to work. People just seem to get frustrated. They're not happy. Where there's other games, I'm like, I have no clue why this works, but people love it. And they're just cracking up the entire time. So yeah, I'm going to move forward with it.
I feel like recently, Jordan, there's in the last like decade, there's been an explosion of more adult games from like Cards Against Humanity. I think there is a kid's version of like What Do You Meme? There's all these like texting ones that can get pretty raunchy. Yes. It's kind of fun to watch. These games feel sort of designed to play with friends over drinks.
Yes. Yeah. There's I think a lot of people before kind of Cards Against Humanity came out thought board gaming and stuff was a kid's thing that kids did with their parents, and that it wasn't this thing that college kids did to spend time, or young professionals, you know, after work or anything. And Cards Against Humanity kind of changed that perspective, because I was in college when that came out, and it was before you could even buy it. You had to print it out and cut out the cards itself.
Oh, that's like at the very beginning.
Yeah, because like no one really thought this was serious because it was an adult card game, and those just didn't really exist as much at that time. But now, they've taken over, like they're huge. And there's a lot of other ones I've like realized, like, you know, people want this, and part of it might be because we're the, the generation that first had to deal with kind of growing up with screens. We're the ones that learned how to text and everything. So this is kind of like that physical tactile outlet to still do things with your friends and everything. So that might've been kind of compensating for the rise of technology a little bit.
Coming up, board games go digital. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're spending this hour talking all about board games. What's new on the horizon? How to play games for a good cause? And we also want to hear from you this hour. What games are you playing? Old school favorites like Monopoly, Cards Against Humanity, or the ever-friendly Clue? Give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you can email allsides at wosu.org. Still with us on our panel of game playing experts is Jordan McLaughlin of New Albany, the founder of Rookie Mage Games and creator of Don't Get Stabbed. Cheryl Harrison, the organizer of Beers and Board Games Club of Columbus, who's hosting its annual 24-hour game marathon November 2nd. Probably a good break right before the election. Take your mind off things.
Yeah, I was listening to your previous segment, and board gaming has definitely been, studied to be a proven reducer of stress. So if you are finding yourself doom scrolling or watching the news and having anxiety, pull out a soothing board game. And that's actually a really big trend in board gaming itself right now, are these kind of cozy games that are kind of easy to learn rules and very soothing themes like knitting and baking and hiking. So it's a really good time for a cozy game.
It's kind of... And finally, Alyssa Schroeder, Chief Marketing and Sales Officer for Dolphin Hat Games, which is the creator of Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza. She's also an adjunct professor at Ohio State. So, Cheryl, I wonder, how large do you think the board gaming community is in Columbus?
We have a very active board gaming community here. The Game Manufacturers Association, GAMA, is headquartered here, and they host one of the largest board game conventions in North America here every June called Origins, which if you've never been and you're interested in kind of a Let's see a little bit about what board gaming has to offer me in one place is a really good place to go spend an afternoon in the expo hall and see what new games are coming out, see what games have been out. We also have multiple board game cafes. There's Tabletop in Clintonville, The Forge up on Bethel, several friendly local board game shops, and even just regular bars and breweries in Central Ohio often have a little corner where they keep board games. So we have a really active community here. And in addition to our club, there are several other board game clubs. So if you're interested in board gaming and you aren't finding people to play with, you aren't trying in Central Ohio.
Jordan, Alyssa, I think this next call might be for you. It's Ruth in Columbus that has a request for a new kind of game. Welcome to All Sides, Ruth.
Hi.
Hi.
Oops. Hello?
Yes, hi, Ruth.
Okay. My phone was making funny noises. I would like to know if anyone can invent a small game or several small games that one can play by themselves, like tic-tac-toe. Or I don't even know the name of it, that one with the triangle with the pegs where you test your IQ.
Oh, yeah.
And have you ever beat yourself playing tic-tac-toe?
You know, that's an interesting, because, you know, Alyssa, when I think of games you play by yourself, I think of playing chess or solitaire or something with a computer, right? The computer is the opponent. But what about a card game or a tactile game that you could do by yourself?
There are actually a lot of games that do have a solo play mode, especially new games that have come out. I played a game last week with a friend called Daybreak, where you are trying to end climate change, but that game effectively played as two people playing by themselves. So I know it would be a really enjoyable solo experience because it's kind of how it worked playing with other people. But there are a lot of board games that are one or more players. So definitely search for the solo play. It's out there.
Alyssa, do you guys have anything that's solo play?
Currently, you know what? We don't. I would say our sweet spot is trying to bring a lot of different people together. Certainly, I think, Ruth, that's a great to be able to play by yourself and, you know, not have to rely on another person, and especially for that soothing, calming things that Cheryl was talking about. Yeah. But for us, mostly, we're trying to bring people together and bring those relationships in. You know, even Jordan talked a little bit about making those memories and those fun moments, which at Dolphin Hat we call like social artifacts of, you know, like, oh, remember that time where, you know, she did that funny thing, or remember that time where I beat you, you know, or whatever. So for us, you know, we're trying to bring like people together and frankly get that kind of range of 2-player to 8-player. But I think that, you know, for sure there's a lot out there for solo players for sure.
I know what you mean about those artifacts. So I have a 7-year-old daughter who is the most aggressive trash talker of any of the game players in our family. And she has said some pretty legendary things, especially during Monopoly. She turns into a teeny tiny venture capitalist once we start playing Monopoly.
Wonderful.
But, you know, it is those memories, those like, that it's warm and fuzzy in a way, Jordan, that I think just sits nicely in your memory.
Yeah, it's one of the things of like we always, I always, when I'd make a game, like, remember the game isn't about you. It is about everyone else that's going to be around it. So like when you're making a game, like that's the primary thing you think of just what are the interactions we wanted them to have? Can you put in like a take that mechanic that is going to make everyone laugh and suddenly change everything, and someone gets to kind of brag of, hey, remember that time you thought you were doing so great, and then I pulled that out and knocked you out of the game. Those types of like take that type things like are really exciting in gameplay. And so like for when I'm designing a game, I like to try to make sure those are in there, because those are the type of like spontaneous moments that people remember playing them.
I want to take a call from Chris in Dayton. Welcome to All Sides.
Oh, my gosh. Hello. First-time caller, first-time getting here. Hello, hello. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. So you've got some favorite games?
Well, actually, talking to you, I changed my question. I have a wife who hates to lose at board games, and so I'm a big Risk player, so that's a very divisive board game. What do you suggest for someone who hates to lose something they're new at?
Cheryl, let's start with you.
I recommend cooperative board games. That way you're on the same team. And, you know, if you're losing, you're losing together. So you're not going to be hopefully the recipient of the wrath of that. But yeah, there's a ton of board games where you actually play on the same team. The climate change game I mentioned a little bit ago, Daybreak, was a cooperative game. My friend and I were trying to end climate change together. Pandemic, which may not be one you want to revisit right now, but that game is a cooperative game. It's a particularly stressful game because a lot of things can go wrong. But there are a lot of games out there where you are playing on the same team.
What about you, Jordan? What is a good game for somebody who doesn't like to lose?
Yeah, cooperative games have become more and more popular. You know, I'm sure they existed before, but in the past couple of years, especially with the pandemic where you had a lot of couples that were kind of, you know, stuck together, they were looking for different options. And these cooperative games have really, you know, it's on my list of things that I need to make because they're just so popular right now. And they're great because like you can do the two player, and a lot of them have like two modes where if, you know, your partner is the competitive one, you can play it that way, or you can switch it out and make it the cooperative. So there's a lot of different ways that these companies have taken games and come up with different modes to try to match the different needs of how people want to play it at any given time. Because like as a game maker, I want you to be playing my game. And so like if there's two different ways that you can do it, you're twice as more likely to play it simply because of whatever kind of mood you're in that day of, you know, it's a bit of a stressful day. You're feeling a little aggressive, so you want to do a little competitive, or it's a nice chilly, rainy day and you just kind of want to chill out. And then it's a nice cooperative mode.
You know, Alyssa, I think some of your games might hit the sweet spot, too, because Risk, there's a learning curve to Risk for sure. And those games can go days sometimes, over multiple days. And I wonder if a game that would be easy to learn and quick to play wouldn't create that kind of animosity. Like Risk would definitely honk you off after a couple hours.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And again, that's where, you know, we like to say at Dolphin Hat Games, we make games for people who don't like games or don't like losing, because, you know, a lot of our, at least our main mechanic or the way how it's played is kind of a speed component. So there's this, can I match my word with this card as fast as possible? And then can I be the first person to slap it? So if you know, like, it's actually funny, and Anna, I don't know if you've seen this in your own family, but sometimes like the little kids actually genuinely beat their parents because they're faster at moving. Like their little eyes and their little hands are just like so fast. Whereas, you know, we've got things on the brain, whatever. So, you know, my advice would be find a game that has a mechanic that maybe, you know, she excels at more than you, which again, in our type of games, there's usually a speed type of component. And that can kind of give a competitive advantage to an unsuspecting person, like, you know, a little kid who just loves beating their parents or beating grandma, grandpa, and that sort of thing. But again, to Anna's point, like our games that all last only 10 minutes, there's a little bit less of an investment to that. If you lost, it doesn't feel like, wow, that 2 hours is now gone. So again, the stakes are a little bit lower. The learning curve, there's not really a competitive advantage to have known how to play it. You know, you've played it so many times before that you know all the ins and outs of the strategy and things you should and shouldn't do. Again, so that's where I like these kind of fun guard games like Taco Cat Go Cheese Pizza. You can just pick up, play, and, you know, pretty much equal playing field.
I would also say I like, depending on what kind of relationship you have, that like Cards Against Humanity, The New Phone, Who This, like those games, you are competing, but they're designed to make you laugh more than, like, for me, it's less about who's winning and more about the like truly absurd combinations that are happening.
I'll add that with a lot of strategy games that have come out in the last decade or so, you often don't even know if you won until the end. So that might also kind of mitigate that experience. Games like Orléans is a game that I really like to play, where every turn you're taking, you're getting points. And so everything you're doing is getting you towards the goal. And you find out at the end if you got the most points. But there's little player interaction that is combative. And everything you're doing is positively progressive. It's just, am I building an engine slightly more effective than the engine that my opponent is building, and we'll find out at the end. So that sort of game where it is competitive, but it's not as cutthroat, player interaction heavy, might also be something that she could get into.
I would say Seven Wonders. I don't know if you guys have ever played it. It might have a little bit of that Risk vibe. It's got that like civilization building, but it plays a lot faster.
Yeah, it plays faster, and it isn't super heavy on the hostile player interactions.
Yeah, because you're just trying to build your own wonders at the same time that they're trying to build theirs. It is a fun one. I wonder, how do you think, what do you guys make, I guess, of digital games? Alyssa, I'll start with you.
Yeah, digital games are, it's an inevitable, right? Like, we live in a digital society, you know, it's going to happen. There's going to be a time and a space for that. You know, I think we really love the in real life, or, you know, that you talked about, Anna, where we can bring people together in that physical world and kind of be a little bit of a break from a digital society. But it makes sense that, you know, sometimes you just don't, you're not used to packing things in your suitcase. You don't want to bring a whole giant game. You want to do something small, and, you know, or you didn't think to bring this to the restaurant with you, and now you're stuck and have to entertain the kids until your meal comes out. So I think it is an inevitable, and it can be a good thing. So I think, you know, our goal is to at least make those complementary and not compete against each other.
Jordan, what's your take? I mean, I think they're kind of two different genres. Like, I grew up on video games too, so they kind of fit two different categories for me, two different interests.
Yeah, like, to me, like, it, you see a lot of board games that, you know, have like their digital version. So like, people were already kind of in love with some of these games, and now it's just another way for them to play something easy on the go. You know, you can take your Nintendo Switch and play it rather than having to take a whole box and set it up in the back of a car as you're on a road trip or something. But some of the stuff we're seeing is kind of like these hybrid games where it still is a tactile game, but there's interactions on your phone as well. So like, it's really good if you're like trying to be secretive or something, you can send messages to the other players. There's other ones where, you know, there's a character that everyone's kind of playing against, and that character is in the phone and it's talking to people and giving them directions. So there we have like this really cool kind of hybrid stuff that's showing up, knowing that, you know, people are still, even though, you know, they want that tactile experience and they're all kind of hanging out there, they all still have their phones in their hands. So if you can find a way to kind of mix those two worlds together, I think we're definitely going to see a lot more of that.
Oh, I think that's neat.
Yeah, the proliferation of digital versions of board games was really helpful, at least for Beers and Board Games during the pandemic. We were still hosting weekly meetups from our house, but we would get on Board Game Arena or Tabletop Simulator or some of these other platforms that enable you to play these physical board games remotely, but we could still have the conversations as though we were in person using our audio. But to Jordan's point, there's been an interesting flux of games that are able to use digital to kind of enhance the game experience. So there's a game I really like called Decorum, which is, the tagline is something about like the passive aggressive game of cohabitation. You're decorating a house with people. And so the physical box comes with 15 or so scenarios, and the conditions of what each player needs do have to align for the game to work. But there's a physical limit on what they're going to include. And so a game like that, they have an app where you can play beyond the scenarios that were included in the box by having a digital component. Or there's a game called Search for the Lost Species, where you're trying to find these endangered species, and the app gives you information, but you also need the board component, the in-person component. And then there's some games like Blood on the Clock Tower, which is a social in-person game where you have an evil team and a good team. But that game really took off as an online experience because there's a lot of information to track. And it's really helpful to have a digital place where you can, you know, keep track of what role Anna told me she was and what information she learned. And so games that were created as in-person games and still played in person can also have a second life as digital games.
Oh, that sounds really fun. Coming up, we're going to talk about how social media is influencing the gaming world. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking this hour about the enduring popularity of board games with our panel of experts. Jordan McLaughlin of New Albany. He's the founder of Rookie Mage Games and the creator of the new game Don't Get Stabbed. Cheryl Harrison, who's the organizer of Beers in Board Games Club of Columbus, which is hosting its annual 24-hour game marathon November 2nd. And Alyssa Schroeder, the chief marketing and sales officer for Dolphin Hat Games, who created Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza. We got a message from a caller during the break that wanted to know your thoughts on how board games can help with child development and the skills that they learn playing and your favorite games to play with kids. So, Alyssa, I'm going to start with you on this one.
Yeah, thank you. There's so many studies out there on how board games, card games contribute positively to self-esteem, to conflict management, et cetera. And it's actually been really fun. One of the most surprising things I had coming into this job and this role has been all the letters that we receive from teachers, guidance counselors, even occupational therapists who just write in to thank us for making a game that their kids could use. I think of this one story that a guidance counselor reached out and said she had a student that had a horrible day, was acting out in class, and was sitting, you know, refusing to speak in her office. And the student looked down and saw this little funny piece of bacon. We have this game called Steal the Bacon. And there was this little piece of toy bacon. And he was like, what's that? And then she's like, well, do you want to play? And then they started playing. And through this game and then, you know, kind of breaking that silence, she was able to get him to open up. And it was this beautiful moment that we thought, oh my gosh, you know, sometimes you think I'm just making this fun little slappy card game, but you realize what you're doing is creating a vehicle for people to, you know, kind of reduce that stress, as we had already talked about, to kind of talk about those relationships and get people to open up. So, you know, that was a side of it that I never really thought until I kept getting, you know, all these emails and all this news from these teachers, guidance counselors, occupational therapists on how our game has helped. So, you know, there's studies on math scores and strategy games and helping. So again, I think it's something that I certainly never thought about until I kind of got into this line of work.
Jordan, what about you? What are good games for kids?
I mean, there's a lot of like if you go do a Google search, you can search like STEM games, and you're going to find a lot of games that are built from, you know, game designers that are also educators. They are teachers, they are counselors, they different things that have created their own games because they've seen a need and they know how to kind of to help in this situation. And so they've created something that then is like a tool for them to use. So there's a lot of that's out there. But one of the things like I've always found very interesting when I'm playing games with kids is they seem so naturally able to figure out a game compared to like adults. Some adults, you kind of have to pull teeth to get them to play correctly. But what we do, you put a couple instructions in front of a kid, you let them see one round, and then suddenly they've got the entire thing figured out. And it's impressive of just how naturally they seem to cling to that tactile experience. And maybe that is part of the whole technology screen type thing of, you know, once they get that experience, it's something that they crave because it's different than what they normally are doing every day.
Yeah. In addition to the, you know, emotional and social benefits that Alyssa and Jordan really touched on, there are also studies showing it does help with cognitive development, with problem solving skills, with critical thinking. I mean, depending on the game, there really is a lot of strategy that can go into it. And there is such a birth of games that are targeted at or child friendly, but it it really is something that is an experience that the children really thrive, and play has benefits for all of us.
You know, Jordan, one thing I read that was pretty interesting is how the industry is moving towards more eco-friendly practices, the use of sustainable materials, switching to recycled papers, biodegradable plastics for game components. How are you thinking about that?
Yeah, that's actually one of my kind of initiatives for in the future, because currently we have like a plastic insert that holds the cards. We're wanting to get rid of that. Like, there's no reason that needs to be there. That was just kind of like the default at one point. But like, there's such a push for it because, for one, it's the right thing to do. Two, customers are looking for that now. So like, we're looking into changing out some of our materials to be more eco-friendly, but also there's other things that we are looking into of, you know, are there ways that we can be more efficient in the way that we transport the games? Can we lower our carbon emissions in different ways? Outside of just thinking about what it's made of, there's also the business itself of where are things that we can do. And it's good that, for one, the gaming industry is doing it, but also you're seeing a lot of initiatives kind of like at the gamma level where they're starting to talk about those options. And the manufacturers themselves are really doing that. Like one of the manufacturers that I work with, when I met with them, they had an entire presentation on, these are eco-friendly stuff that's available now. Be like, we want to push these, and we want you to know these are options that you have now when you're thinking about a game and how you're going to design it.
What about Dolphin Hat? How are you guys thinking about sustainability?
Yeah, and so I echo everything that Jordan said. You know, even literally just last week, we were with a printer who was presenting, hey, you know, if we could just design the cards a little bit different, then we could reduce, you know, the amount of paper we use, et cetera. And it was really things that you wouldn't have thought about. You're like, oh, I had no clue that like my little design on this card really would have an impact on how you have to print it, and therefore what that means for a carbon footprint. One thing that we were really excited about is our game used to come in kind of a plastic, clear plastic wrap. So that way, you know, if it's sold in the store at Target, like we are, Walmart, you know, you can't just, it doesn't just fall apart. You know, it can last, it can be on the shelf. But we worked with a printer to just create a whole different setup that alleviated the need for all the plastic wrap. And we've sold over 10 million games, you know, which is quite a few. And so now, you know, at the volumes, selling millions of games a year, even just removing that plastic wrap from the outside of the game has made a phenomenal impact to reduce plastic use and go to more renewable resources. So we've been excited about that. Again, we're excited to keep moving, you know, working with our various manufacturers and stuff. But yeah, and especially one thing that we like is just in general, our footprint of our games are pretty small. So if you think of like a normal pack of cards, our games are not much bigger than that. And it's funny because sometimes you look at like an Exploding Kittens or other games and you're like, they actually have fewer cards than we have, but they have a twice or three times the size of a box. So that way it looks big on a shelf. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Just we like, from a logistics standpoint, you know, we can ship, you know, three times the games that they can because we're a third of the size. So I think between those two things, we're efficient in size and also working to just get the right materials and processes through.
One thing you can do if you're interested in getting games and sustainability as a driving factor for you is don't get them on Amazon. Get them at your friendly local game shop, which comes with the added benefit of someone who can recommend games to you based on your interests, based on your play style, based on the age of people you're looking to play with. We have a lot of really great game shops here in Central Ohio, Tabletop in Clintonville, the Guard Tower, Beyond the Board. If you Google Columbus Game Shop, I'm sure there's one within 10 miles of you, and they can get you that game, you know, cut those transportation shipping carbon emissions out of the equation, and have an expert who can actually tell you if you're going to like the game.
They can also tell you about other games you didn't even know you wanted.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I like about local bookstores a lot of times, is talking to them, being like, okay, I really love this author, this author, this author. What should I read next?
Yep, very much the same experience.
We got an email from Sierra, who says she enjoys competitive games like Wingspan and Tokaido, two games I have never, ever heard of.
Wingspan was a very popular game that came out about 2 or 3 years ago, designed by a woman. There's not a lot of woman-driven games. Obviously, Alyssa here on the panel is an exception, but that has been a big force in what has kind of been a male-dominated industry. So Wingspan is a bird-watching game. It's beautiful. If you're interested in birds, you'll love it. I'm not interested in birds. I still love it. It's a very pleasant gameplay experience. There's little bird facts on all the cards. So that's a really joyous experience. And then Tokaido is a game where you are traveling across Japan. So that is also a really fun, pleasant, kind of in that cozy category I mentioned kind of game where they're not hyper competitive. The themes are pleasant. The artwork is pleasant. And at the end, maybe you win, maybe you didn't, but you had fun along the way.
I saved one of the hardest questions for last, which is, do you have a favorite board game? Do you have a favorite game? Or it could be the favorite of the moment, favorite of a genre. Like, I'll let you, you don't have to pick the one and only tried and true, this is my favorite, unless you have one.
Yeah, that's a hard one. It changes all the time. For me, a game that I'm always excited to bring to the table at our Beers and Board Games meetups right now is Scout, which is a trick-taking game. So Midwesterners are probably familiar with trick-taking for Euchre and games like that. But there has been kind of a explosion of themed trick-taking games. And Scout just has some interesting mechanics that kind of scratch an itch for me. It's a pretty easy game to teach people. It plays up to 5. A lot of games only play 4 people. So pretty much every week I pack that one in my bag because it's one I'm happy to teach. I know it's only going to take a few minutes, and that's a good time.
Jordan?
That's one of those questions where it's depends on what portion of your life you're asking me. Because, like, you know, I have, there was a game called the Omega Virus, which was, you know, when I was a kid in the 90s, I got for Christmas, and I just played that thing to where the box was falling apart. But then, like, nowadays, there's a game called Chameleon that I absolutely love playing with my friends. It's so easy, everyone picks it up. And it always leads to laughs. But also, you know, if I want something a little more heavy, you can never go wrong with Risk. I love playing Risk. We used to play it, you know, at a friend's house as teenagers. We'd be up all night playing it down in his parents' basement. So, yeah, I've got a lot of different memories with different games that makes me love them.
Elisa?
Yeah, and for me, you know, just when you started talking about nostalgic games, of course, the one that came up, and maybe I'm showing my age here, but if anyone remembers Dream Phone as like
oh my goodness,
that was like, oh my gosh, who has got a crush on me? So sorry, I had to mention that one. I haven't admittedly not played it since I've been married happily 13 years.
That is such a throwback.
Dream Phone was the way to go. But more recently, I would actually have to say, I really think it's this game that we just came out with called Moose Match Mayhem. It's already been a top seller at Amazon and at your friendly local, store as well. And it's just a speed matching card game. Again, kind of levels the playing field for everyone, plays up to 6 players. Just super fun, easy, very Taco Cat-esque. But yeah, so I would say, as of now, Moose Match Mayhem. But yeah, back in the day, it was definitely Dream Phone. So glad that you guys remember that as well.
I do remember that one. Was that different? I think there was also a prom date one at some point.
Probably. Yeah, I recall it was like you had this big pink, you know, 80s
yes,
phone.
Yes.
And you had to like call these. It was like you and your girlfriends calling this number, like, oh, is it Eric? Does Eric want to like go out on a date with me? And then you're like, no, it's Eric, you know. And then
I remember like, oh, this. It was quite numbers. Something.
Yes.
So what do you think comes next in the board gaming industry? What is the future? Also, an equally tough question.
Yeah, I mean, the trends in the industry change all the time, but I think we'll continue to see games that have thoughtful gameplay experiences. You know, I think kind of minimizing the friction for a lot of games has been, between players, has been kind of a trend. I'm a kind of player who likes friction. I like games where we're yelling at each other and accusing each other of lying. So I'm an anti-cozy game style player usually, but it's good to see games that really appeal to a wide variety of people and kind of help bring everybody to the table.
That was Cheryl Harrison, the organizer of the Beers and Board Games Club of Columbus. thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks to Jordan McLaughlin of New Albany, the founder of Rookie Mage Games and the creator of Don't Get Stabbed, a game I'm definitely going to have to go buy now.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And finally, Alyssa Schroeder, the Chief Marketing and Sales Officer for Dolphin Hat Games and creator of Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza. And what was that moose one? One more time.
Moose Match Mayhem.
Thank you so much. And thanks for joining us.
Thanks much for having me.
And I want to say thank you all for listening to All Sides right here on 89.7 NPR News.